This is Courtney Edwards. You're listening to the HER podcast from the Razorback Campers Hale Studio. This show's focus is highlighting women in the community who are making an impact, whether big or small. Hi, everyone. I'm here with Misty Poole of Steamatic. Hi, Misty. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
All right. So tell me about what you do for Steamatic. Are you the owner?
I'm one of the owners. We are family-owned and operated. My husband, myself, and my father all run it. We have the Steamatic in Hot Springs and also the one in Little Rock. We recently purchased the Little Rock office. It's been about 7 years ago. So my dad actually goes over there several days a week and handles that operation. And my husband and I have our own tasks here in Hot Springs. He handles all of the water, fire, smoke, and mold restoration. It's real detailed, lots of documents. I'm real creative, so I'm not as organized as he is. So I handle all of the carpet cleaning, air duct cleaning, tile and grout cleaning, all the residential and commercial services that aren't within that restoration realm.
Okay. So when was the Hot Springs office, when was that opened?
We became a franchise, a Steamatic franchise, in 2001. My dad actually started the business when I was in high school. He had a series of unfortunate events with an untrustworthy bookkeeper. He had a Razorback vacuum, and then he also did like door-to-door vacuum sales, and he had several offices around the state. And so after some money was embezzled, he had to kind of pick up a different way to get that money back. My mom was a school teacher at the time, so at night they would close the office down and she would finish work, and then they would go clean carpets in different places just to get some cash flow coming in. And it kind of built a little bit. My husband started, it was called Razorback Carpet Cleaning. My husband started there in, I believe it was 96 or 97. And then he kind of put some systems in place. He's ex-military, where the organization comes in. He got uniforms, he got systems in place, scheduling systems, that kind of thing. And then I started in 2000 when we had our first child. And then in 2001, we branched out and bought the franchise because we wanted to get more involved in water and fire restoration. And at that time with the industry, they wanted to work with a national name, not a mom and pop organization. So we bought the franchise and stayed the same, just changed our name and our logo, and were able to get on a lot of insurance programs as a preferred vendor.
Right. But you're still basically a family business, a mom and pop shop.
We are.
You operate as one, at least.
Yes.
Okay, so tell us about Steamatic. What kind of people come to you? Is it, oh, I just want my carpet cleaned? What goes into that?
First of all, we have the most fantastic customer base. I love our customers. A lot of them I never even get to meet in person. I've just talked to them on the phone all these years. They're just wonderful. But we have a really wide range of people. We have people that just want their carpets cleaned. We have, of course, people that need emergency services like water restoration, maybe come home from work and a supply line's popped off a toilet and it's run all day long, whole house is flooded. Of course, they'll call us and we do 24-hour. We're on call 365 days a year. And we have techs that are assigned so that when an emergency comes in, they respond and are on scene, typically depending on the location, within 1 hour of getting the call, so that we can start keeping the damage to a minimum. We have on our air duct cleaning side, usually people call for that if they've got a particular issue, asthma, allergies, a bad odor in the house, maybe their air's not cooling like they think it should, or in the winter it's not getting as warm as they think it should. So they call us. We do a lot of commercial work. We have a lot of commercial accounts for carpet cleaning. We have some that we do on a monthly basis. We have commercial customers that will call us when they've had a lot of employees that have health issues. Maybe they're all, you know, running around with runny noses. They've got a cough. They only feel bad when they're at work. So they call us and we come in and take care of all of the air duct and unit cleaning for them too.
Wow.
So it's a wide range of people that call us. which is why we're busy year-round.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yes.
And being on call just 24/7, how many employees do you guys have?
Between both sides in Hot Springs, we average about 20 to 24 employees. But we have, we try to keep people specialized. So when they come in every day, they know that they're going to take care of carpet, tile, hardwood floors, furniture. I've got my air duct crews that know that they're handling strictly air duct cleaning. And then we've got our restoration crews, and we put them through a lot of schooling. We do certification training. I'm actually a certified carpet cleaner as well as a certified air duct technician, although I don't actually go out and do the work. I can. So we really make sure that they're educated. The restoration side, there is a lot that goes into it as far as moisture readings, managing the humidity levels. There are formulas they have to do to know how many air movers and dehumidifiers need to go in a room that's certain size. There's a lot of pH information that my techs on the carpet cleaning side need to know. So they have to learn a lot of chemistry things in order to be able to perform properly. For an example, if you have a spot that's an alkaline, you have to use an acid to remove it, and vice versa. If you put alkaline product on an alkaline spot, it'll set it in. So we do, it's through the IICRC that the majority of the training is through, and it's a worldwide nonprofit organization that sets the standards for each one of our services that we have, except air duct cleaning. They don't do that. So we researched and found NADCA, which is the National Air Duct Cleaners Association, and they're very stringent. And they're, for the longest time, we were the only ones in the whole state of Arkansas that were NADCA certified. I'm the only female in the state that's NADCA certified. So we really make sure that our techs are educated so that when they do come upon something, they know what to do, and they don't do something that's going to make the problem worse.
Wow. So as a certified carpet cleaner, what did you learn about cleaning carpet? You kind of already covered a little bit, but what else goes into cleaning a carpet that many people don't realize?
Well, in the certification process, you have to learn how carpet is made. There are actually five generations of carpet where they've changed things over the years to make carpet more durable, from changing the shape of the fibers, to adding chemicals to the carpet, to adding protector. Every carpet has to come from the factory with a protector built in that will wear off over time. My goodness, I learned so much stuff. Dry soil removal is extremely important, which is basically vacuuming. And there's a general rule of thumb that for every beating heart in your house, you should vacuum one time a week. I have two dogs, a cat, a husband, and a son at home, and myself, so that would be me vacuuming daily. I don't do that. I should do that. I know that's the rule, but simple things like that to help people maintain their carpet in between cleanings. The reason that they do suggest the dry soil removal is because the sediment that gets in the carpet, about 75% of it is not water soluble. So we can come in and clean all we want, but 75% of that is still going to be in the carpet. It's not going to be dissolved. So as a part of our step, the first thing we do when we go in a house is we vacuum very thoroughly with a commercial grade vacuum to pull that up. The more customer vacuums, the easier it is too for us when we come in. It just creates a lot cleaner environment for us from the get-go. Most of the time when people call us, they have spills or pet issues, that kind of thing, and so they have to have us come do it. But if they're vacuuming on a daily basis or a regular basis anyway, then that will help the life of their carpet last longer too. That sediment actually will act kind of like a sandpaper in the carpet as you walk over it. The non-soluble sediment that's in the carpet, that could be dander, skin cells, just dust, pollen, those kind of things. And it will actually start over time. If you notice like traffic areas in rooms where it doesn't look as fresh and fluffy as the carpet on the edges, people don't walk along the edges of their rooms. So that traffic over time will actually start to damage those fibers. And so that's why the vacuuming part is so important.
And I'm guessing you guys have seen a decline in carpet users. People are getting rid of their carpet and getting hardwood tiles,
we have
things like that.
And you know, in the 22 years that I've been there, a lot of things have changed. A lot of things are still the same, but a lot of things have changed. It's forced us to have to change as well, just from different ways that we've learned to be able to clean carpets, different techniques. We obviously had to add in tile and grout cleaning and hardwood floor cleaning. Most people just push a mop around on their tile. The problem is it's not really picking it up. So their grout lines get really dirty. If they've got a sculptured tile, then it will leave, you know, stuff in the little edges of the sculpture tile. So they'll call us in to come and do a good restorative cleaning, and then we try to help them with some tips on maintenance cleaning to, so it'll, the cleaning will last a little bit longer. So yeah, we've had to change with that, even with our the way that we do our restoration work. Used to, each individual large insurance company had their own program. They decided that it would be easier at one point if they passed it over to another company to handle it, which is what's considered a TPA, a third-party advisor. So those TPAs actually, we're a member of two of them, and they're the two largest in the United States. So I'll give this insurance company as an example. If you have USAA insurance, you have a water damage, you report it, there's one TPA that we're on their program that they call us when there's an emergency situation, and then they handle everything from start to finish. And that takes a little load off the insurance company. It takes some off the homeowner, because if you don't know anything about it and you've never been in that position and you pull up Google and look for water restoration companies, you don't know who to choose from. So these third-party companies actually go through and they vet us very well. We have to have certain insurance requirements. We have to have certain certifications. We have to attend conferences. They're very strict on what our guidelines are as far as what we have to turn in to them to prove that the work's been done properly. We have to send them moisture readings. We have to send them all the photos. We even have to have a picture of the front of the house so that they know that that is the house that we did the work in. So just a lot of things in the industry have changed, and we've had to kind of learn how to adjust our sales and trend with it so that we don't end up like Kodak, who was a film company and a camera company, and now everybody uses their cell phones, and pretty sure Kodak's almost non-existent now. So we have to try to stay educated ourselves on what's changing, how it's changing. We try to stay ahead of it the best we can so that we're still here to provide these services for our customers.
Right.
At one point, there were probably about 17, 18 years ago, in the phone book, there were 38 carpet cleaning companies in Hot Springs. That's a lot for our population. I think now, as far as true local companies, there are probably about four, maybe, that aren't coming in from another city to service the customers here. So we've hung in there with everybody.
Yeah. And I think a business like this can be seen as something that's unnecessary, especially if you don't have carpet, mm-hmm. until it comes to that emergency situation. Yes. And you need it.
Yes.
And so what is an example of an emergency where someone that's on call may have to go?
Okay, so there are quite a few, and it's different calls that we get. We've had customers that have come home after being gone on vacation. One in particular, we had to go to Arkadelphia for one night. They had one of the sunken living rooms, and they had left for a trip. They were gone a week, and they came back, and their water line under their sink had burst, and it flooded the house, but it stood in that sunken living room, and when they walked in, their furniture was floating in water. And so, of course, at midnight, they're in a panic. We're in a panic. We get there and have to start the extraction process. We've had sewer backups that happen, even people with fire damages, because a lot goes in. I know I'm saying water damage, fire damage. There's a lot that goes into all of those things. On a fire damage, it can be something as simple as us, having to go in and just, you know, sometimes people will, we have a lady that she stuck a bag of chips in her oven to warm it up, but it caught fire. So it didn't really do any damage, but it smelled the house up. So we had to go in and decontaminate the air, do some air duct cleaning, that kind of thing. We've had houses where we have to go in and pack all the contents out, bring them back to one of our warehouses. We have a pretty extensive setup for fire damages when we do contents cleaning, and we have an ultrasonic machine, which we found cuts the time of cleaning each box tremendously. It might take 2 hours to hand clean all the items, but then we can take them out and put them in this machine, and it takes about 5 minutes. And then we rebox it, we wrap it, put it in new boxes, ozone it. We have an ozone chamber. We can go in. We actually have had to go in and help rebuild houses before. We do have a contractor's license, but we try to stay on the side of the cleaning portion of it. Fire departments, when they come in on a fire damage, can actually do more damage with the water to put the fire out than the actual fire itself. So we've had to go in right behind firemen before, extract water, start the drying process, just to be able to get it to a point where we can start cleaning them after the fire as well. So those are some pretty good examples of emergency calls that we get. Usually on Christmas, my husband always takes all the calls to give all of our people a break. They're on a rotating schedule. And one year at Christmas, it's been quite a few years ago, my phone went off, my husband's phone went off, and my dad's phone went off while we were unwrapping gifts. And it was a set of condos that a pipe had burst and flooded about 8 floors. And we said, can we eat real quick? And then we'll be out there. They said, sure, no problem. So my dad and my husband actually went out and did all the extraction. And I think they were out there for about 8 hours on Christmas night extracting water. Because the thing about damages, especially with water is very dangerous and very intrusive. You don't really think that it is. But the longer it sits, the more damage it does. If we can get out right when it happens, or as soon as you discover that it happens, we can get out and do the extraction and start the drying process. We do have customers that will call us, and they'll try to put box fans on and dry it themselves, and then about 3 days later, it's still wet and it smells soured. It's because it didn't get dried properly. A lot of times we have to lift the carpet up off the tack strip, pull the pad out, put new pad in, dry the carpet, and then put everything back in place. That pad can't breathe under the carpet because of the backing structure, so it has to be lifted, and people don't know that. If they're not in the business, I wouldn't have known that. So they try to dry it themselves, and they might get the top of the carpet dry, but everything underneath it's still wet, and then that's when they start getting that smell. Mold is a really big thing around here because it's so humid. Unfortunately, most of the insurance companies have started to write off mold as something that they'll cover. So we had one lady, and we really felt bad for her and her husband. They had a house that they didn't live here full time. They just used it when they wanted a weekend getaway. And their neighbor was supposed to be watching the house, and I don't think he did. And it was 8 days between the time he checked on it and then he went back to check on it, and a supply line had popped off a sink, and it ran in the heat of the summer, and there wasn't a bunch of air conditioning going on. So they actually had mold on every square inch of that house, all the contents. The ceiling fans had absorbed so much moisture that they drooped. The furniture started to split. Pieces of wood were popping off. Unfortunately, the insurance company only covered the damage created directly from the water. And there was so much mold that we actually had to cut out sheetrock and replace doors and things like that. And so they were stuck with a house that the insurance covered 1 foot up the wall and down to the floor. So then they had to pay for the rest of it to get it all going, back to normal, because it was uninhabitable. It was a really one of the worst damages that we've seen. So mold is considered now a secondary damage because it does take a minute for mold to grow. It doesn't start the instant water hits. So that's why a lot of insurance companies have started writing mold out of being something that they'll cover. So anytime you start seeing mold, or if you even have a water damage that needs to be taken care of, as soon as you see it, and if you put it off, then it could be worse, and then the insurance company can refuse to cover depending on what your policy states.
Wow. Now we have to remember that these stories are over 22 years of time.
Yes,
everybody.
This isn't all just in 1 year of time. I've got a lot.
Right. So don't want to scare anybody.
For local content like this and much more, subscribe to the Sentinel Record by visiting hotsr.com and clicking subscribe.
So what made you want to join the family business in the first place?
Well, this is not exactly what I thought I was going to be doing with my life. I graduated from Henderson in 98 with a psychology degree. I was making more money managing a shoe store when I graduated from college than I could with my actual degree, unfortunately. Psychology is very interesting, but unless you have a PhD, it's really hard to make a good living with that. When my husband and I decided to have our first child, my dad made me just a deal I could not pass up, which was, hey, come work with us, bring the baby, you don't have to work nights, weekends, or holidays anymore. And I thought, oh, that's perfect. It's really hard working with family. I'm just going to put that out there. We have now, you know, we're fine now, but it was a little bit of a rough start because here I come in, I'm new to the business. They've been at it for a while. I had to figure out where my place was. I'm old enough that typing, we didn't have to do a ton of stuff on computers in college yet. AOL had just come out when they were mailing the free disks out to everybody for internet service, if that tells you how long it's been since I've been in college. And so I actually couldn't type very well when I started. So I taught myself how to type. Pretty much everything I do is self-taught, out of necessity. I didn't walk into a job where I was paid really well and we just had all kinds of money. It's been a very, very strong effort on my whole family's part to build this business and get it going and to keep it going. I get tickled sometimes when I've got new guys that come in, especially younger ones, because now I'm starting to hire people that are my son's age coming in, and I've got a desk, I've got a cute little pink sign that says Boss Lady on it, and I think that they don't realize what I've done, but I've literally done every single part of our business except for sewer backups. I can't do that. But I've gone out in the middle of the night and done water damages. I've done carpet cleaning. I've done tile and grout cleaning. I've worked nights and weekends and, you know, done mold wipe downs. I mean, I've literally done every part of our business out of necessity. I've done fire damage cleanups. I've been ripping carpet out, wet carpet out at night. So it's been a lot of work, but I can't see myself doing anything different than what I do now. I do the majority of the administrative work at our office, on top of handling all of the residential and commercial services. I've had to learn my own marketing. I've done my own marketing for years down there. I've had to create ads. I've had to create mailers. I've had to find different ways. And that, too, has changed over the time, as you know. Used to put an ad in the phone book, ad in the newspaper, got calls all day long, and just the times have changed. And so I've had to learn how to adjust that. I used to schedule all the appointments. I used to know all my customers by their name and their address because I talked to them all the time on the phone. I've got two full-time assistants now. I've got one part-time, and then I have a full-time bookkeeper. And it takes all of us to keep that office running. We've gone to an all-digital platform, so we don't have all of the paper and everything. It's more convenient for everybody. So we notify customers by text and email of appointments, reminders. All of our invoicing is now digital. It's cut back on a lot of work, and I just think it's made it a little bit easier for us, and it makes it easier for the customers too. So it's been definitely 22 years of really, really, really hard work, but I just love what I do. I love talking to my customers. I love mentoring my employees. I've got very long-term employees, 10, 15 years. One of my secretaries has been with me. It was 16 years in August. I've got another one that she's rolling up on 15 years. We have project managers on the restoration side that have been with us 10, 12, 13 years. We're just like a little family down there, and I think that's one of the things, because I've worked at places in the past where it was hard and you were not treated well. You were just a number on a pay clock, and I hated it. So, of course, being family-owned and operated, we want to kind of present that same atmosphere to our employees. And I think we've done a really good job of it. Right. I still have employees that worked for me 10, 12 years ago that if they've moved out of stay and they come back in, they'll stop and say hi. Sometimes they'll call me on my birthday. And, you know, I really enjoy the relationships that I've built over the years.
Right. And those built relationships can, that feel like family, can be easier than working with real family, right?
Oh, yeah. A whole lot easier. And, you know, we've shared victories together. We've celebrated births of children and grandchildren. And, you know, we've cried over deaths of family members and friends and, you know, just hard times. And it's just a really neat atmosphere that we've worked really, really hard to build. And I love it when I have a new employee and they look at me after they've been with me for about a month or two and they say, wow, this is not like any job I've ever had. And I think that's one of the reasons why we keep people so long term, and they really work hard for each other and for me to make sure that we're taking really good care of our customers as well, which is what the whole goal is at the end of the day, is to make sure our customers are very happy with us.
Absolutely. One thing you said that I thought was interesting, not to mention the difference in age between us, but sure. You said you didn't know how to type very well.
Mm-hmm.
I never realized people actually had to learn how to type on a keyboard, because I was born in 1999, right? So by the time I was even competent, I mean, they had keyboards. We were in the computer room at school, so it was, it's just an always, you've always been able to do it kind of thing for me.
Yeah.
That's super interesting.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever brought that up.
I had a, I think when I was a senior, I graduated from Lake Hamilton, and I think I had a keyboard class, a typing class. Well, when I was in junior high, I had a class where we actually used an electric typewriter. And then in high school, we learned keyboarding on a computer, but all through college, I mean, it wasn't necessary to type papers. Of course, we didn't have Google and all that stuff that was a big thing where you could do Google Docs and submit things back and forth that way. So, I've got excellent handwriting for the record, and I'm left-handed. But, it was hard. I actually found a game that taught me how to type, because I'm real competitive. And so I would try to beat the clock on the little shark that would bite the hook if I didn't get the word typed out fast enough. And that's probably what helped me out tremendously on my typing. But I type like I'm on fire now. So
yeah. And one thing that might have added to that is cell phones having the same layout that you use multiple times a day, if not hundreds of times a day.
When I started down there, actually, we used pagers to communicate with our techs if we needed to get in touch with them. And then we went to two-way radios that they had in their vans, because not everybody had cell phones back then. And of course, now we've got cell phones and they've got their tablets, and we do mobile payment processing. And like I said, our platform that we use is all digital. The customer sign with the stylist to get the work started and all that stuff. So I'm pretty proud of my generation, because we've had to go through a lot of different changes that I don't know that the others have. And it is funny. When we bought our Little Rock office, my parents found a bag phone, which was the first cell phone I ever had when I was in high school. And they found it in a storage room, and they thought it was funny, and they brought it and left it in my office. And my kids walked in, and they were like, "What is that?" I said, "This is like one of the original cell phones," and it was just mind-boggling. If my kids, I raised both my kids at our office before they were old enough to start school. If they had not been down there, I don't know that they would know what a landline is. Because they're just cell phones, you know. Everything's cell phones and computers, so.
Yeah. I remember when my parents got rid of their landline, which they share a cell phone, because for some reason my mom will always lose her cell phone.
Oh, really?
Yes. So it's very hard to get a hold of her these days. What would you say is the importance behind getting your air ducts cleaned? Why is that important?
Okay, that is a service that relatively newer to this region of the country. It's been prevalent in the north for a long time because most of their heaters burned oil. Oil puts off a residue which would go through their air ducts and get on everything. So that became a necessary service there. We don't have that problem here. But air ducts collect. You're going to have several changes of air per hour, which means the air in your house goes back through the unit several times an hour, depending on the size of your house and your unit. And so all the stuff that that filter collects, filters are not going to collect 100% of the things in the air that are irritants to you. I'm fine. I don't have really any allergies, but my oldest son has a lot of seasonal allergies. So the air duct cleaning, over time, you will get a buildup in the air ducts. People that have breathing problems or allergies are a lot more sensitive to the air that they breathe than, say, I would be. So, of course, you want to get that. Now, air duct cleaning only has to be done, depending on your lifestyle, about every 10 to 15 years, not like carpet cleaning. I would have to have mine done more often because I've got inside pets. I have a teenager still at home. I have all of his friends through the house tracking things in. New construction houses, people don't think about that. We remodeled our house quite a few years ago, and they masked and taped off and did a great job. But it was in the heat of the summer, and my air ran the whole time. And that sheetrock dust was picked up and dispersed into every room in the house. And it was like a white, slippery film on everything. So new construction houses, I know people don't think about that. But that stuff starts getting in the unit. When your unit starts to get clogged up, then it doesn't run as efficiently as it should. And everything that's in that unit, and the coils and the blower and everything, eventually start coming out into the air ducts. And then that eventually comes out into the house. A lot of times people will notice maybe some brown or black coming off of one of their vents. That's the stuff making it from the unit through the ducts and starting to make its way out. We do have quite a few people that will call us and say, hey, I've got this family member in the hospital. They've had heart surgery or they've had this surgery, and we want to make sure they come home to a sterile environment. In addition to the air duct cleaning, we also sell UV lights. And what UV lights are designed to do, it uses UVC, and that actually scrambles the DNA of bacteria, viruses, mold, so it can't duplicate. So once it's been sterilized, it eventually dies off. So people that have mold allergies, and it is real common to find mold in units here in our area just because of our humidity levels. Mold doesn't bother me, but it, like I said, it bothered my son. When we first started selling this particular UV light that we have, I let them put it in my house just as a guinea pig, let them try it out, make sure that they understood how to put it in properly before we went into someone's house. And it took me about 2 or 3 months before I made the connection. My son quit with the sneezing and the coughing every morning and the, you know, snotty nose. And the only thing that has had changed was installing that UV light. And so I'm a firm believer in it if it's necessary. So yeah, usually those are the things. I've had people call me before that they've had new flooring put in and they have floor vents, and for whatever reason, the person that put the flooring in just swept all of the stuff down into the ducts, which of course is going to restrict airflow. It's going to make the unit work harder. The unit's not going to last as long, so we've had to go do that. We have had people call us that have had flex duct, which was really popular, started probably about in the 80s. It was easier for them to install, but it doesn't. I had them put the hard metal ducts in my house when we built it. But animals can burrow into that flex duct much easier. So we've had them call us and have a funny smell in the house, and maybe a possum has gotten in or a raccoon and couldn't quite find its way out. And so we've had to go get that out of the ducts for them. So I have quite an entertaining job.
Wow, it sounds like it.
Yeah.
Wow. I was going to ask next, what's the most difficult thing about your job? But I think you've probably already answered that a few times. So do you want to tell us about the coat drive you have going on right now?
We have started a coat drive at our office. Our community has been so good to us over the years that we're trying to find ways that we can give back to the community. Last winter, I started volunteering at one of the warming shelters in town. And, you know, I'm not blind to what goes on, but I also didn't realize just how bad it was. So if we can do anything by helping get coats for people that maybe cannot afford their own, then we're going to do that. We thought about doing it last year, but we waited a little too late to get it organized. So April, that's in my office, she's one of my assistants, she's been in charge of getting this together. And so we're just accepting gently used coats. We'll even take hats and gloves. If you have those to get off your hands, you can drop them by our office. We can pick them up. You can give them to the technicians while they're at your house working. They all know that if somebody just hands them a coat to bring it back to us, it's for the coat drive. And I believe it's going on until right before Thanksgiving. And we're going to spread out the donations between Samaritan Ministries, Potter's Clay. There's so many great organizations, Salvation Army, Jackson House, all of those around, just around our office, that we can disperse those to. Even if there are any schools that need coats for their students and the students can't afford to buy them, I know several of the schools have food and clothing pantries here. If we can help donate stuff to that too, we're gonna do that. I don't know if we've gotten any kids' coats in yet, but right now we've had about 40 to 50 brought into us already. So we're off to a good start, and we just started about a week and a half ago.
All right. And it's already starting to get chilly here in the morning.
Yes. It was a little surprising this morning when I took my dogs out.
Right. And is there a particular gender coat size you're looking for right now?
Anything. Any kind of coat, because there is such a wide need in the whole county. Babies, children, boys, girls, men, women, large, smalls. I mean, we're taking literally anything that can be given, because there will be a need for it.
Okay. And those can be delivered to 112 Jefferson Street, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think my last question is just, do you have any advice for someone who may want to start their own business one day? What would you tell that person?
You have to be really strong. I know that we're kind of in a time right now where people see people that start something and they get rich really fast, and it's just not that way in reality. You have to be determined. You have to not be afraid to work. You have to be able to change and do whatever part your business needs you to do, because you might not have the ability to pay for somebody to take care of that role. Not going to say I'm a control freak, but I know that if I do it, it's going to get done right, which I've had to learn over the years to delegate, find the right people, get the right people in the right spots. But until you can do that, it's going to be tough, and you're going to be upset several times, and you might cry. But if you can stick with it, I think the average, I want to say it takes about 10 years to get a business profitable once it started. Those statistics may have changed over the years, but I know it's a hard climb. Once you get to that point, you still have to maintain it. You still have to stay with it. But for me, it's worth it. I've done this for so long that I don't think I could go work for somebody else anymore, just because I've had to be the decision maker for so long. But if you don't mind the work and you feel a lot of satisfaction from doing your own thing, it's totally worth it. But you'll have great days and you'll have bad days. And I have a list of pros and I got a list of cons, but my pros very much outweigh my cons for being self-employed. And like I've told you already, I can't see myself doing anything else.
Right. Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Misty, for coming on the show and for the great interview.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Her Podcast from the Razorback Camper Sales Studio. Join us every Tuesday as we highlight local women and discuss how they are making an impact in the community and what got them to where they are today.